Welcome to Nosecast. Homilies delivered in the Holy Gnosis of Thomas Chapel, the Ecclesia Gnostica, in Salt Lake City, Utah, by the Reverend Troy Pierce.
Today we celebrate the Feast of the Transfiguration of the Lord. And it is a pretty small story as far as length goes, but it has such oomph to it. It is quite a remarkable story. In particular, if we enter into the story the way the Gnostic tradition bids us, it is even more meaningful. In the story, Peter, James, and John, and Jesus go up a mountain, traditionally Mount Tabor, and there they have an experience. There they see the transfiguration of the Lord. They see the Lord go through. There's a figuration of visage, a figure, and a transfigure, which can be understood as being more than one figure going through that, or being transcendent, becoming transparent to some greater truth. In that experience, they see the face of Jesus shining as the sun, and his raiment, his clothing, white like the light. So they really see this as a figure of light, shining as the sun. Well, the sun has been a symbol of Christ, as long as it's been a Christianity. In fact, it's also been one of the reasons that people put forward that there never was such a person as Jesus, is because the symbolism of the sun is so strong. We celebrate his birthday on the 25th of December, not because he was particularly born there, but because that is the sun's birthday. And the emperor declared that to be the day of Sol Invictus, the unconquerable sun. So this symbolism is very strong. And when we celebrate Easter, it isn't necessarily the exact day or something. It's hard to make sense of lunar and solar calendars corresponding exactly at any point anyway. But the date of Easter also comes from the sun. It's the first Sunday, again, symbol of the sun, following the first full moon, symbol of white and light, following the vernal equinox, symbol of the sun. And this is very much an experiential understanding of Christ, Logos, the Redeemer, as being that light that shines through, that breaks through the darkness, being that light of a greater consciousness that sees beyond the simple appearances of things. And on this, in the story of the Transfiguration, the disciples are able to see beyond the simple appearances. The lesson for today is from Isaiah. It talks about, traditionally understood as being the prophecy concerning Christ. There will come a rod out of Jesse. And it describes this figure in certain terms. It says that he will be one who will have wisdom. He won't judge with the mere seeing of the eye, or the hearing of the ear. He won't judge on appearances. He won't judge on what he's heard about somebody. But will rather judge with righteousness, with knowledge, knowing, reverence. Seeing beyond these mere appearances into who is truly there and the real situation. And that is what this unveiling, this opening up of the figure Christ does for us. Lets us see beyond a human being who embodied Christ for time and is still a symbol to us, whose story is still strong for us. But it opens that figure up to this transcendent experience that people are still having now, that we are still having now. We're not experiencing the mere appearance, the mere surface, shall we say, of anyone from ancient Galilee. They're quite a ways away from us in time and space. But what was seen, this figure of light, of radiance, still being experienced by us all. The disciples, we're not told how James and John react to this, but after they see Christ shining as the sun, they see two figures there. They see Moses and Elias. And this is one of the ways in which Christ was understood at the time and is understood today, is as a prophet, as a messenger of God. In the Gospel of Thomas, there's a point where Jesus asks, "Who do you say who I am?" And one of them says, "Well, you are a righteous messenger." You are like a wise philosopher. And in the canonical version of this story, you say, well, you are like one of the prophets of old returned. But this is not merely what Christ was. And these two figures showing up and them conversing fits the figure they're seeing, this figure of light, into their holy tradition. We have Moses, who is the one who sees the Lord, or has a deep experience with the Lord, in Old Testament stories and stories of Exodus, of liberation, which were very, very pertinent to the people of Judea at this time. They were looking for a new Exodus from the Romans. We also have Elias, the figure who rose up in a chariot of fire into the heavens, who did not die, and for whom a glass of wine is poured during Passover. For you never know when he's going to show up. And so, seeing these figures there, Peter, who is, of course, Peter, has a bright idea. Hey, this is a pretty good place. We've got Christ shining like the sun. We got Elias. We got Moses. We can open up a theme park here. Let's put up some houses. Let's hang out here together. Let's try to hold on to this experience. The tabernacle is a permanent tent, and he offers to put one up, one for Jesus, one for Moses, one for Elias. So they don't even have to be roommates. They can have their own little house. Who knows what the disciples were supposed to live, but hey, it wasn't a well-developed plan. And when he says that, when he makes that keen observation, Peter being the literalist, or the butt of most all Gnostic jokes, of an overshadowing of a cloud of light, essentially. And the overshadowing is that it comes over the scene. And that a voice comes out of that. You know, this is my beloved son. Listen to him. This Peter's going, trying to make some other kind of sense out of this experience. He wants it to be physical. Not only that, he wants it to be permanent. He wants to have a place to hang out here with Moses and Elias. And one can see that that would be a cool thing. He could then come and bring his family, and they could see the prophets of old and see Christ shining like the sun. And it would be a great confirmation of what you're doing and the fact that you left your fisherman's job and are following this guy around. We can sympathize with this desire. But it isn't the way these things work. We have these grand epiphanies. We have these keen moments of insight. We have these abilities at times to see through the surface of things, to the transcendent nature of things. But there's always the next moment, the next hour, the next day. As the Buddhist teacher wrote, after ecstasy, the laundry. These lovely, incredible spiritual experiences, and then you still have to do the laundry, go to work, fix dinner. One has to still maintain the physical existence as well. And you cannot try to turn the spiritual experience into a physical existence and try to hold it the way Peter tries to do in this story. He wants to be able to continue to see and be able to hear what Moses and Elias are talking about. And in wanting that, he's ignoring the cause of all of this. He's ignoring Christ. He's not listening to Christ. So this experience of a cloud, this booming voice, and all the disciples, of course, fall on their faces, overwhelmed by this experience. And then when they look up again, everything's normal. There's no prophets. There's no shining like the sun. They're just up on a mountain. And these experiences happen. To focus on having experiences is a way to kind of be an addict to epiphanies. You're seeking a type of emotional response, not so much the illumination that comes from an experience or an epiphany. The emotional reassurance. Also, to be in that kind of an experience is a nice boost for the ego. If nothing else, then you were at least chosen to see this thing. And egos like that kind of thing. They feel reassured, actually feel the spiritual experience. And of course, that part of us that is the ego likes to control things and identify with things. And it would like to control this experience and identify with this experience. Try to hold on to it the way Peter does. But these experiences happen, and they pass us by. And what we can gain from them that is permanent, that is never lost, is gnosis. But gnosis requires us to be aware of the circumstances in which this experience occurred, to be aware of the experience itself and ourselves in relationship to that experience, and then to allow a process to occur, a process of inner growth and transformation, and where we become something more, having gone through this experience. And becoming more, we have a deeper understanding of this experience. And this can happen in multiple cycles from one experience. A big experience like the one we're dealing with today, we're looking at the story of, must have been a huge experience, whatever the original experience was. And we know these things can be messed with a little bit through tradition and retold a little bit differently. But they point to something that was so important that people talked about it later and passed it on. In the story of Christ, this transfiguration doesn't really make any sense. It isn't part of the plot, shall we say. So it really does seem to point to an experience. And this is the kind of experience that would need to be revisited again and again by the disciples participating in it, even by those who hear about it, who kind of experience it secondhand by hearing the story, participating in the story themselves. And by going through it again and again, we gain a little bit more gnosis from that. There is a large integration that must occur, but growth happens on its own timetable. It doesn't just happen because something comes in from outside and gives you a little knock on the head, wake up, and oh, I'm all done. Like every other part of human growth and development, it takes time, and there's only so much you can accomplish at a given moment or in a given cycle of understanding. And so you come back to it again. The story, you come back to it again. And each time you come back to it, you have an opportunity to gain some more gnosis from it, to grow in relationship to that story. And this is why in our tradition we focus so much on these stories, on these myths, on these symbols. And in the larger tradition, we return to them again and again. Every year is the Feast of the Transfiguration. Every year we turn our attention to this particular story. And it's an opportunity for us to enter into that story and to be transformed by it, by this story of a transformation of the figure of Christ for the disciples and what happened. It's not as powerful as if we were there having this experience as well, but we can still gain something from it, just as if we continue to participate in the story, the larger story and symbols of Christ through such things as the Eucharist, or through reading, through private spiritual practice. It lets us enter into those things and lets us gain and learn from the experiences of others and make those our own through that process of attaining gnosis from it. So here, as we celebrate this year, Feast of the Transfiguration, we take some of that experience with us, consider it, and grow from it. And when we have our own experiences, do the same. In a way, they're not special because they're our own. They're merely given to us directly. And all the stories of the tradition are our own as well, in that same way. And not our own, not owned by the ego, but transcendent and coming and reaching to us. In Nazir tradition, as we reach forward for liberation and aid, it's reaching towards us. And it does so directly and through these stories and symbols. Let's take those with us out into our lives. And may the mystery of that which hangs twixt heaven and earth descend upon us and may it dissolve.
Information and resources on Gnosticism, visit the Gnosis Archive at gnosis.org. That's GNOSIS.ORG. And the Gnosis Institute at gnosisinstitute.org. If you'd like to continue receiving these podcasts, please consider a voluntary subscription of either $13 or $25 a year. That's $1 to $2 a month to make it possible to continue to provide this service. Thank you.